Welcome to the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Any questions, comments, concerns, whatever you got, give us a call, 204-269-8636. That is 204-269-UMFM.
A lot to talk about tonight as we get into a very serious situation from a... Again, I don't know where people are coming from when we talk about this stuff, but... Whatever. Words can be a weapon of choice, people. I want to bring that up right off the bat because if you're unaware right now, before we get into it, though, I was just about to get into it. I didn't even think about it. Beans, how are you?
I'm great.
Good, good. With us, to my very right, across from you, is our good friend from the Manitoban, Jason Pajak. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Good, good. Glad to have you on. Glad to have you to come in and discuss this because it's something that we tend to discuss a lot when you're on is hockey culture and... This is a bizarre one and certainly not a very good one. If you're unaware, February is Black History Month. For those who may not be in the know.
Very important month of the year.
A big month in terms of understanding somebody else's culture. Certainly a very important day in terms of the community, the African-American community, in terms of their knowledge and their history and what they're doing. Today marks the last day of it, obviously, with March being tomorrow. It's estimated that there are approximately 1.2 million African-Canadian citizens in Canada right now. And I bring this up because, once again, Canada has to deal with an ugly incident that's gone all the way up to Parliament, where somebody decided to do something extremely stupid at a hockey game. And I bring this up because we're going to talk about it because I don't know how many times we have to go over this, but... Canada, we're better than this. At least I thought we were. At least I hoped we were. Jonathan Diaby, if you're unaware who he is, he plays for the Marquis de Jonquière in Quebec in the North American Hockey League. The LNAH, if you're looking up the French version of that. And they were in a game the other night against Saint-Jérôme. And Saint-Jérôme's fans were trying to get under the skin of Mr. Diaby. He was in the penalty box, and it seemed that there was a fan who decided to get up and emulate the actions of what a monkey would do. And then further to that, decided to complicate the problem even further by showing Mr. Diaby pictures of monkeys on his phone as he sat in the penalty box. When nobody did anything in the crowd to prevent this this person, stretching that term a little bit, preventing this person from doing any more, and in fact joined in, Mr. Diaby wisely decided that he was going to step out of the game and go and protect his parents who were sitting in the crowd. The security guards with whom he talked about removing this gentleman told the gentleman to sit down, did not remove him, and then proceeded to walk over to Mr. Diaby's parents in the crowd and asked them to move seats for their safety.
You're also missing the point where his family was surrounded on the concourse by a bunch
of
fans.
Well, that happened. Yeah, that happened as well. And let's be honest, Fee. Everything on the table right now. What the hell is going on?
The best response that I saw on the news story on Twitter was somebody saying, "Why are we acting like this is news? Every single time this happens, we get shocked. It's a systemic problem that happens at rinks across the country every single day."
So, I get that. But the problem is it usually happens in whispers. It doesn't happen so overtly and so involving so many people. That's the problem, I think. And that's why it's getting the news is because it wasn't just one guy. and having a couple of people go, you know what, shut up, sit down. It was one guy, and then it was an entire section of the crowd.
And I mean,
like, why?
And I mean, for better or for worse, it's exactly that. It's the fact that we've dealt with it in whispers. Like, I have heard the worst stuff said on the ice about people's race, sexual orientation as a favorite among players to throw back and forth to one another.
I mean, we saw the whole thing with Acadia and Saint Effects.
And that was only a couple weeks ago.
Right, exactly.
Like, it's for better or for worse, we are seeing it more often, and it is becoming newsworthy more often because of the age of cell phones and videos. More leagues are having live streams and having press at events, so it's becoming more visible now, but that's still not good enough.
See, now, the CBC went out and interviewed George Laroque in terms of being in Montreal. George Laroque lives in Montreal, does a radio show there. CBC went out and talked to him, and he was talking about how the North American Hockey League used to be just this gong show league where it was fights all game, and if you got out alive, you were lucky to make it to the next game.
It was a great Vice documentary on it.
Right. And so they've cleaned up their act quite a bit. They've gone out and they've said, we understand that you guys want to fight, that this is going to be a tougher league, but we can't have these antics going on anymore. We have to have an actual hockey game once in a while. And so they've gone out and cleaned up their act. Mm-hmm. But now that this has come out, I don't know if you can take what they're... I mean, again, I can't throw the league under the bus just yet, because I'm sure they're going to come back and try and find out who this guy was and all that kind of information and try and maybe ban him from coming into the rink anymore. But the fact that this continues to happen... And again, we're talking about examples now, and I'm not just going to... At first, it's going to sound like it's all Quebec, and I apologize to people in Quebec, because it's not always Quebec. But there are examples in Manitoba that we've recently seen. There are examples from Quebec over the past number of years, including a couple decades ago. There are examples in Ontario. There are examples.
Wayne Simmons.
It's all over the place. It happens in the U.S. I just read Grant Fuhr's story, Grant Fuhr's book, and he said when he was playing in the 80s for the Oilers and they go to the States, it was rampant down there. Mm-hmm. He heard nonstop comments like that. And I'm going, okay, well, it happened to Val James. It happened to Wayne Simmons. It's happened to Mr. Diaby and Jonathan Diaby in terms of what he's seeing. It's not like it's just a Canadian problem. It's not like it's just an American problem. It's an entire North American problem.
It's a culture problem from top to bottom. And I would go even further to say this is not a last 20 to 30 years. This has been going on for a long time.
Yep.
The book Indian Horse talks about racism against Indigenous people in the sport. Just very briefly, it's not the main part of the story, but it shows the alienation that those people feel when they become caricatures, when they step onto the ice and they try and take part in white society.
Right. Well, I mean, we've seen this again. Friday, June 1st, 2018, I wrote about this on Hockey Blog in Canada. There was a First Nations elite Bantam AAA team that went to a tournament in Quebec to participate. There were several Cree, Algonquin, a couple of different people, I guess, in terms of everything that went on. But these guys came together, were playing really well, were doing extremely well at the Coupe Challenge Quebec AAA tournament from May 25th to May 27th. And again, CBC reporting on this, Susan Bell, Betsy Longchap, and Corinne Smith, they compiled the story on it. But basically, these young men had a war cry that was done by the fans towards them. The tomahawk, the motion of a tomahawk as they passed by the fans going to their dressing room. Like, I don't know why people think that this is acceptable behavior.
It's because we're taught it from a young age. I can speak very frankly here.
Yeah.
Growing up playing hockey in Winnipeg, myself, my brother, and lots of our friends played teams from Indigenous communities.
Right.
And we'd always talk about the Rez teams and how tough they were and how if you went in there, you went to their barn, you'd be lucky to escape without a black eye and a few broken bones. And we never stopped, and nobody ever challenged us on it. We'd talk about that in the dressing room. Coaches would never say anything. Our parents would really... My parents were kind of active in it, shutting that stuff down, thankfully. But parents, you know, we'd be saying stuff in the hallway, and parents wouldn't say anything. and our opposition would lean into it, and we never stopped to ask why we thought these things and why those teams played like that, is because they're confronted with that. They're confronted with that identity and that stereotype, and they are played. People play against them that way, expecting it. It's the Thomas theorem. That which we perceive to be real becomes real in its consequences.
Exactly.
You will act accordingly. If you think that that is reality, you will act as if that is reality, and you will create that through your actions. Jordan Tutu talks about it a lot in his book, growing up in Nunavut, where fighting and violence were part of the game because that was expressed. That was survival for them. That was the way that they lived. And when they came down, when he started playing in Manitoba, even in northern Manitoba, it followed him and it was expected of him. He was pressured and faced tons of racism and classism. He faced so much prejudice and it molded him into that person.
So I want to bring up this article. Peter Worrell, who you may recognize, former Florida Panther, former Colorado Avalanche forward, wrote about his experiences in his own words, his treatment as a player during his time at the QMJHL's Hall Olympique for CBC Sports, and it was published on October 23rd, 1998. He writes, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll read out some key passages. From the seat in his stands at the Marcel Bédard Arena in Beauport, Quebec, he was on my case and he was unloading on me. His insults were not about my hockey skills or my style of play. His screams were only about the color of my skin from beginning to the end of the game, nonstop. Hey, monkey. Hey, Africa sucks. Coach, you have 19 yellows and one Negro on your bench. Sitting with on the bench with my team, the Hall Olympiques and the QMJHL, I drew upon all my strength to remain completely impassive. None of my pain, my frustration, or my anger would appear on my face. I'm not going to lie, I was close to tears, and the insults just kept raining down. I was 17 years old in the spring of 1995, still a child. It was my first season in junior hockey. That night, in our first game of the semifinal series, I had only one shift on the ice. I was not a factor in this game.
The thing about that that really gets to me is that they face this every day. And the one time that they show any emotion, they show any reaction that completely validates what everybody says.
And you're right about that, and I'm not going to deny that. The thing that caught me on this entire in the entire passage was this. Why did many other spectators, instead of condemning this behavior of this oddball, chose to laugh and encourage him? Why did they side with him? Most of all, I wondered why the captain of the opposing team, Ian McIntyre, what he was thinking across the bench from ours. He could hear the racist cries of the Harfangs fans. If you didn't know, Ian is black.
It's because we're Canadian and we don't want to confront each other. We don't want to cause a scene. We don't want to disrupt anything. We don't want to cause a problem. We don't want to rock the boat whatsoever. And I'm sick and tired of it. I know if this was in a... If this was not in a Canadian situation, if I fully believe that it was an American situation, they would have gotten away with it too. But we live in a culture here, especially the hockey culture, which believes that this is part of the game, that doesn't want to shine a light on it, doesn't want to confront it, because if we confront it, then we admit that it is a problem and that it exists.
And but, then that but by puts, not confronting it, we're making it more of a problem.
Exactly,
that's the issue.
Exactly.
Like, what are you thinking?
It's people aren't thinking. They don't want to be the person that's ostracized. They don't want to be the person that is known for speaking out. They're not the person that, you know, obviously there is the kind of psychological side where this person is hurling racial epithets and is being very aggressive, and you don't want to confront that person because they're like, oh, they are off their rocker. They're probably going to start swinging at me if I go over there. But there's also the social aspect where you don't want to be the one to rock the boat. And if everybody around you is complicit in it, that makes you complicit in it because you do not want to stand out. They're standing out because they are a prejudiced person and they are trying to be involved in whatever way possible in this game.
Yeah.
Doing it in the completely wrong way. But you don't want to be the person that's singled out for doing the right, even if you're doing the right thing, because you do not want to be the person singled out.
I'll rip this from Deadpool 2. I'm not going to take credit for this. This is definitely a Deadpool 2 quote. Doing the right thing is messy. You want to fight for what's right. Sometimes you have to fight dirty. And I'm going to say that right now. If you're not going to get involved,
yeah,
you're not only condoning it, but you're actually allowing it to further the entire process.
It's the same thing with bullying and in schools and stuff like that, right? Is if you're the bystander, it's almost as worse as being the actual bully, mm-hmm. right? Not doing anything. I mean, I don't understand why this isn't a criminal thing nowadays. Why is this is assault? You're assaulting someone's verbally.
That's true.
It should be taken seriously. It should be a criminal offense. It should be people. I'm not saying people would do it less, but you would probably see it done less in public. You would see it done less because people would be afraid to be charged, would be afraid to go to prison or face a fine, whatever. Telling people you can't come to this place anymore is not going to stop the fact that they're racist.
That's not solving that problem.
No. Putting them in a jail cell might change their actions, might change the way they think when they realize that this is hurting someone and I'm hurting someone.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's 2019 and racism is still not a crime.
Yeah.
Unless you're threatening that person, unless you are you're saying that you're going to kill them or being physically aggressive, nothing happens to you.
So we've made a couple of examples about Quebec, and I apologize, Quebec is not all of Quebec. It's some stupid people in Quebec, but nonetheless, it happened in Quebec. I want to bring on maybe a bit of a fun twist on this, even though it's an ugly situation, just because it's been pretty heavy so far. We're going to play a little segment here called This. And we're going to bring in Hockey Manitoba for a little bit of an examination now, because Hockey Manitoba doesn't get off scot-free here. And I hate to say this, Hockey Manitoba, but might be a little bit racist.
There's too much racism everywhere. That's,
yeah.
But here are the two big things. So if you haven't heard, there used to be an old Keystone Junior Hockey League.
I played in it.
Had 10 teams in it, teams all over the place in terms of different locations.
Tried to recruit my brother.
Oh, tried to recruit your
Both
brother.
Both me and my brother played.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Five teams withdrew from that Keystone Junior B League, leaving only five First Nation communities to participate in that Keystone Junior League. Line drawn right down the middle in the sand. It wasn't hard to see which five teams were leaving, which five teams were staying. But then to further complicate factors, those five teams that left and started their own junior league, which is now, I believe, aptly called the Central Region Junior Hockey League, went out and raided the remaining five First Nations teams for all of their best players and brought them to their teams, leaving those five teams in hard times to ice a team. Yeah. Not only that, but one team already decided that they were going to hang up their blades this season because they couldn't ice a team. So now they're down to four. Pilot Mound, which was the most sort of vocal about this, recently built a brand new arena and has nobody to play in it now. So the Fisher River Hawks were the one team that pulled out. They're taking a one-year leave of absence, leaving just the Peguis First Nation, Norway House Cree Nation, the Opaskaway Cree Nation, and the Cross Lake First Nation in terms of the remaining four teams.
And I'm pretty sure Cross Lake just came back not that long ago.
That is correct. They also just returned recently. So when it was found in court that technically the five teams had a chance to walk away because there's no rule on teams staying or leaving that, now the lawyers for the remaining four teams, the four Indigenous teams, are now suing Hockey Manitoba because they say that the rules that they created basically hamstrung these teams into not being able to play anybody this year. So, again, we'll ask.
Yes.
Well, where you draw the line.
When you're isolating communities who are specifically the delineator or the common denominator is they are a different race than you, it's a little bit racist.
Yeah. I mean, and just playing in the league, like, as a player, I mean, some of the most fun times I had were going to those communities because, you know, the camaraderie between guys and taking those bus trips and the atmosphere at the games.
Yeah, those communities are...
They love the game.
Exactly. That's what... When you go to MJHL games in OCN or Weiwei, or you go to... going to KJHL teams games out in those communities, the atmosphere, like you said, the passion that those fans have for that game, it turns it from a bunch of ex-Junior B guys or guys that couldn't make it it turns it into something way more intense and just it matters so much more.
Yeah, I remember we had two playoff games up in Norway House, and I scored both overtime winners in those two games.
Hey, look at you.
And just the reaction after I scored was just the dejection of that crowd, because they wanted so badly to win these games that it was just, but it was just so much fun for us to play up there, and we enjoyed it. And but yeah, I mean,
Lawyer Jamie Kagan, if you really want to get into this, who is representing the five Manitoba First Nations seeking the injunction, his quote was almost to a T. In fact, I'll read it right here. Quote, "I can't say they're racist because I've never met them, but if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, then it's a duck." Unquote.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you cut out, you know, if it was like, hey, like the west and the east side of the province, and, you know, you cut it down the middle and those teams play each other, those teams, then you maybe have a different story. But when you draw the line between the First Nations communities
and everybody else.
It's not a straight line. It's a jagged line that isolates communities.
Like, and you got, is Aarberg still in the league?
Aarberg is still part of the league.
You got Aarberg and Peguis, who are literally like next door to each other, and you cut them. You keep Aarberg, but you cut
that. That takes their argument.
That is racist.
Yeah, that takes their argument that it costs too much to drive out there. And it costs too much for the families and whatever. In the winters, it's so bad because nobody can make it out there. That makes me call BS.
Yeah.
Because Aarberg is way out there.
The funny thing is that when we went up to Norway House, or we went to Cross Lake, wasn't in the league when I was there, but Norway House was the big travel trip for us, that Norway House sent the bus. Norway House paid for us to go.
Yes.
Norway House paid for us to stay there.
Opaskwayk Cree Nation was doing that in the MJ for a while, with the MJHL for a while, in terms of making sure that not only were teams able to get up there in terms of the cost, they also gave them places to stay and made sure that they were well taken care of.
Didn't cost us anything to go up there.
Exactly.
So, I mean, talking about financially going up there, that's a terrible excuse.
Exactly. And you're taking teams, like, there are teams in the MJ and there are teams in the KJ and the MMJHL where players have to pay to be on that team.
Yes.
Whereas other teams, you pay people. My brother plays in the CSHL, and there are guys from like St. Jean that get their gas money and get like a per diem because that community pumps so much money into those teams. If they're taken out of that league, that money's gone.
Yeah.
So, example number one, we've determined to be racist. Let's go to example number two in...
Is it racist?
I received a note directly from, dated January 28th, 2019, two minor council representatives from Peter Woods, executive director of Hockey Manitoba.
When you said you were going to drag Peter Woods, throw him under the bus in this episode, I was like, oh, I wonder what this is going
to
be about.
I do not know to whom this went to, other than who the minor council representatives are. I have no idea who those people are, but I'm pretty sure I wasn't supposed to get a hold of this. Now that I have a hold of it, though, let me read to you this memorandum that went out to all of the minor council representatives. Quote, "I am writing to confirm that I have received several inquiries regarding the position of Hockey Manitoba pertaining to players participating in First Nation tournaments during the sanction period. It has been a long-standing practice to allow our members to participate in events that are considered to be culturally significant." Okay? There's a couple more lines in there that basically talks about how it predates Peter's appointment to Hockey Manitoba, but he doesn't see any opposition to that. The next paragraph reads, and I quote, and this is going to be a key phrase, everybody, "Hockey Manitoba recognizes that there is clear value in allowing players to participate in cultural events without penalty, which is similar to the same position we've embraced for players who've been selected to play on sanctioned provincial, national, or all-star teams." In other words,
without penalty.
In other words, we not only approve of players going to play for, as I said, provincial, national, or all-star teams, we also approve you going to play in these culturally important events.
Yeah,
without penalty, with no hockey Manitoba will not look down on you. He goes over a little bit, these programs, as our participation in First Nation tournaments, are beneficial to individual overall growth and well-being, and Hockey Manitoba considers it important to allow members to celebrate their ancestral or cultural health or heritage. Excuse me, let's read the line above. Fine, not a big deal. The next paragraph, Hockey Manitoba does not treat cultural events, including First Nation tournaments, in the same manner as in-season summer hockey tryouts or unsanctioned leagues. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That the last two words, unsanctioned leagues is an important piece of this because at the very end of this memorandum, it reads, quote, "It is also important to note that not all First Nation tournaments are sanctioned by Hockey Manitoba. Therefore, participants should be aware that insurance coverage is not automatically guaranteed simply because members have been approved to participate. Hockey Canada insurance is not available for any participant who plays in an unsanctioned event." I'm going to ask again.
You just contradicted yourself.
You just said, in the same manner as it does not treat cultural events the same way as unsanctioned leagues, yet we will not cover you for insurance if you play in an unsanctioned tournament.
Even if it's cultural.
Sure, you guys can go off to your fancy little First Nations tournament, but we're not going to cover you at all.
Listen, we want you to go take part in this tournament. It's going to look
very
really
important.
Good. You're going to go up there. You're going to learn all about the culture and the heritage of this indigenous group.
Hockey Manitoba is going to get to put up
but
a banner.
But don't get hurt.
Yeah.
Don't get hurt.
Because we're not going to help you.
And if you do get hurt, don't come crying to us. Then why would you go as a team to any of these events if you're not covered? Yeah. That makes no sense. You can't have your cake and eat it, too.
Yeah. Trying to make yourselves, Hockey Manitoba trying to make themselves look good, but at the same time, putting in that last little jab.
You know what would look,
they want
you
those
know
photos and press releases, but they don't want to shell out
you
the
You know
money.
What would look good? Don't make any comment about policy.
No.
Just ask us if you want to go. We'll find out if it's sanctioned. If it's not, we'll let you know.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
But no, we're going to come out and we're going to treat everything. We're totally in favor of you going to these First Nations tournaments,
yeah.
Even though they may be unsanctioned. And even though we don't treat unsanctioned leagues any different, we're not going to treat these cultural events any different than unsanctioned. They're going to be different. If you're playing an unsanctioned league, you don't get our coverage.
Yeah.
But don't go because we may not insure you.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
It's go, but don't go.
Listen, we're going to be supportive of you. Don't go. Don't go. It sounds like a really good idea, Dunko. I don't want to see you miss out on this opportunity, Dunko.
It's like putting that dollar on the street with a fishing line and,
exactly.
And just kind of like pulling it in slowly as you go to grab it. You know?
So at what point, if your hockey representatives, in these two cases, Hockey Quebec, the QMJHL, the Ligue Nationale North American du Hockey, whatever the hell it's called, and Hockey Manitoba, at what point do they look themselves in the mirror and go, we're racist? We've made up policies that are inherently racist.
When the public perception starts turning on them and they start getting yelled at every single day until they have to make a move.
And that's where things need to start changing. I agree 100%.
How many years ago should have this been not happening?
But this is what I mean, though, is that not only are we allowing now Hockey Canada, and I'm sorry, Peter Woods, you're involved in this. This is your memo.
Yeah.
Not only are you allowing Hockey Manitoba to further this narrative, but they are encouraging it to continue the stereotype and the actual racist beliefs that people have to continue, because we're not going to send any city teams now. We're going to send any of these, you know, these decent teams full of white kids up to that Aboriginal tournament, up to that Indigenous tournament, because we're not insuring you.
Yeah.
So if your kid breaks a leg, tough beans, kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like the Brandon Montours and the Ethan Bears and the Jordan Tutus, they're just going to start going, then there's none.
Yeah.
The quality of hockey is just going to drop like a rock.
And I get the unsanctioned leagues, but if you're going to come out and talk about this, like Peter Woods did in this memo, where we're going to make a differentiation between cultural events and unsanctioned leagues, then you support them all or you don't support them at all.
Yeah.
There is an all or nothing here, and it's not, we'll decide as we go along. How much money does that Indigenous tournament have? Because they're going to have to pay us a fee to have our Hockey Manitoba logo on it.
Yeah.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. How much money is involved for us?
It's like a quarantine, right? They're mm-hmm. trying to quarantine different communities.
It's disgusting.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that it happens. I mean, especially they have the right. They have all these things, the right to play. All these.
Hockey's for everyone.
Organizations.
Hockey's for everyone.
All these organizations. It's hockey's for everyone, but only certain people can play certain people.
But again,
we're
essentially diving into, and I know the allegory is going to be a little bit different, but this is essentially how Animal Farm started.
Yeah.
If you read the George Orwell book, everyone has equal rights. Some are more equal than others.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
But what?
Equal's not equal.
Like, we've been beating on this drum. Hockey's been beating on this drum for so long that we need to grow the game, and everybody needs to be involved. Everybody has a right to play this sport. But then the powers that be, and as we've seen with all the examples that have been brought up on the show already, the fans themselves and the players themselves are like, no, I want to keep this little thing for me.
Yeah.
You know? Like, the other sports, like football, baseball, soccer, basketball, they have their own problems.
Oh,
they do have major problems.
I agree.
But for some reason, hockey is the one sport where it's like, no, this is mine.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you want to be that protective of this problem. I would like you to be a little more, not sharing, but a little more, let's not do this anymore problem.
Yeah. In like 20 years, when Canada is no longer the best nation in the world in hockey, and we're pretty darn good at soccer, you're going to wonder where this all went wrong.
Right there. Right then and there.
Hockey's always been that sport where it's like, well, we don't want to get our fingers dirty, and we just kind of.
But
like,
again, I look at this as from a completely different standpoint, in that the reason it happens so often in hockey is it's a predominantly white sport.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. That's the rule.
Since day one, and still is, it's a
white people in the stands, white people in stands, white people on the ice. Don't be different around us.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That scares us.
Don't change it.
Don't come into my area and change things. I don't like that. But that's
give me tons of money and tons of exposure because I deserve it.
Well, yeah, that's the all the other part of it. But so that's a little bit of fun as we break into our second half of the show here coming up right away. As we said, thank you for joining us here on where we've determined that most things are racist in hockey. In saying that, hey, you want to hear a couple? I did a couple of I was busy today. Do you want to hear a couple of new
soundboards?
No, a couple of new station IDs. Do you want to hear? You want to hear them?
Yeah. Well,
we'll get them going. Okay,
it's that time, isn't it?
Legal ID coming up right now. We'll be back after. It's going to take about a minute. I'm going to play the first one. The first one's the official one. The second one though is going to be fun though. So here is the first ID here on 101.5. We'll be back right after this as we get into the second half of the hockey show. Stay tuned for that, everybody.
Oh, radio, radio.
You're listening to CJUMFM 101.5, broadcasting from the University of Manitoba at 1200 watts.
Radio.
So if you're a fan of Sesame Street, that's where that one came from. I'm not sure if anybody wants to hear that one.
These station IDs that we have at UMFM are...
They're from all over the place. Here's the other one that I found, though, that I thought was awesome, though. So we can I'll play this one now just because we got a little bit extra time.
How do you find your music, what you listen to?
Radio.
You still listen to radio? Yeah.
Wait a minute. You still listen to radio?
Well, a lot of people...
Don't you?
A lot of people don't
listen... In the
are
car.
You, well, is it like, is it like a satellite radio station, or are you listening to old kind
just
of...
Just a little thing with a knob.
All right.
Ding, radio, FM...
Yeah. What I noticed you drive yourself around. You drove up here today. What are you listening to in the car? Radio?
Radio.
Paul McCartney listens to radio just like you. Thank you for supporting community radio by listening to 101.5 CJUMFM.
Paul McCartney talking about radio. That was awesome. I mean, he never talks about that kind of stuff, so the fact that we got Paul McCartney on...
He's listening to the show right now.
He could be.
He could be.
He very well could be. You never know.
Could be.
But Paul McCartney talking about radio, I think that was from 60 Minutes.
He's probably in line at McDonald's or something.
By the way, there's already been an Islanders jersey chucked at John Tavares.
I told you.
We were just going to bring that up.
Before face-off was dropped.
What are you
he was
doing?
Walking off at the end of warm-ups and somebody threw a jersey at him.
I see that there's people wearing 91 on the back with the word traitor on the back. And they even have towels made up saying traitor on them.
Like, I don't know. Okay, you know what? Let's get into this because this is gonna drive me nuts.
But one thing I want to mention first, though, but the best thing in hockey right now is the bunch of jerks thing from Carolina.
That is hilarious.
That's the best thing.
We'll get to that in a second because that's another thing I want to talk
about.
I love the idea, but the execution was
too much.
No, and I'll tell you why the execution was bad in a second. But here's the problem I have with the Leafs and their fans. Or not the Leafs, I guess. The Islanders and their fans. Yeah. Leafs I'm fine with in terms of... I mean, I'm not fine with them. They suck, but whatever, you know.
This is a train.
I didn't see this kind of... Again, people were outraged when Gretzky got traded. I get that. Gretzky was the golden boy for the Oilers, and he got traded to L.A., and people kind of lost their minds for a few weeks, and all of a sudden everything settled down. And then he went from the Kings to the Blues, and nobody in L.A. lost their mind. And then he went from the Blues to the Rangers. Nobody in St. Louis lost their mind. If Wayne Gretzky can leave, can just demand a trade or walk out of town for whatever... Don't forget, he got traded because he was getting married to a Hollywood actress, Janet Jones. He got traded because at the trade deadline, the Kings were trying to just divest themselves of whatever big money contracts they had. And then he walked from the Blues to go play with his buddy Messier in New York.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. If none of those involved a reason for him leaving that he was unhappy or didn't like the team, why is it that Islanders fans can carry on for, what, 6 months now to 8 months and whine like a bunch of crybabies over a guy who left via free agency, via the right that he has, for a place where he's always wanted to play?
Yeah.
I heard the best argument is that sports fans in New York aren't used to free agents leaving. They're used to free agents coming. They've got the Yankees, they've got the Rangers,
the Islanders went through the Milbury years. They're used to this. It's not like this is a surprise.
Yeah, but like every team has gone through this before.
Right.
Toronto, Curtis Joseph almost got that team to a Stanley Cup, decides to bolt off to Detroit to make more money.
Matt Sundin, who wanted out, who vetoed a trade at the trade deadline to make the Leafs better, leaves via free agency, gets back, and everybody pours their heart out for them.
This happens every 3 years with the Ottawa Senators. Marion Hossa, Jason Spezza, Danny Heatley.
Happens every 3 weeks this year.
Yeah. Mark Stone, Mike Hoffman, Eric Carlson. There you go.
Yeah.
Couldn't remember his name. Dominic Hasek.
To be honest, the fact that the Islanders cannot let this go, like this is borderline teenage ex-girlfriend crying on YouTube and making videos about it.
Yeah.
Let it go. Move on. You have a first place team when everybody thought you would miss the playoffs, and you're the guy that you're pining over is playing on a third place team behind two of the best teams in the entire league.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are not getting out of the first round this year. They are not going to advance to the Stanley Cup. He's there for the next whatever it is, 8, 10, 15 years, whatever it is.
7 years.
Whatever. They likely won't win a cup as long as Tampa and Boston keep doing what they're doing. Stop worrying about John Tavares.
Yeah. The Islanders literally won this. It's literally a trade. They took Toronto's GM. They got a Stanley Cup winning coach. They've got one of the best stories in Robin Leonard in the hockey world. And the team's in first place. What are you complaining about? You got Matt Barzal. What are you complaining about?
We don't have John Tavares. Why did John Tavares leave? Who cares? He left.
Your team's in first place.
First place, and you got tons of cap space left to work with.
Exactly.
So it's
what's Barzal going to ask for that you can't pay?
And to hear Lou at the trade deadline come out and say, we're not making a move just because we're in first place, just because we have to make a move. We are very happy with the players we have. Yeah, you're in first place.
Yeah.
There is no reason to make a move. What are you complaining about? Stop it.
Yeah.
Your fourth line is better than most teams' third line. Somehow you've got found gold in Clutterbuck, Cizikas, and Martin.
But I think we were talking about earlier that this is just something so that they can talk about and have news and people to bitch and complain about.
I get that, and I understand that, and not a big deal. I mean, if you want to talk about something that's a little bit more important in New York, and I get that you don't like the Yankees on Long Island either, but Tulowitzki hit a home run in his first at-bat against the Blue Jays. Like, that right there... That's redemption for Tulowitzki. You're paying him $20 million to hit home runs against you.
Yeah.
But John Tavares left because he had the opportunity to leave. You didn't tell him to get lost. You didn't trade him away in because he couldn't afford him. He decided he wanted to play somewhere else.
Yeah.
Good riddance. Have a nice life. Don't look back.
And if anybody should be mad at that John Tavares isn't playing for the Islanders, is Garth Snow, right? Like,
yeah.
That really should be the person you're
That's
mad
true.
At.
That's true,
yeah. So what
was he doing for those 9 years? Not giving him a competent team to play with.
Not try to get him extended.
A team he literally had to drag to the playoffs the times that they made it.
Yeah.
You know what Islanders fans should be mad about is the fact that they're paying Rick DiPietro until like 2026.
Listen, Rick DiPietro, don't take anything away from Rick DiPietro. I get that the anger over him is big, but let's just go back and look at some of the names that were there. Zdeno Chara played there when Mike Milbury was there. Roberto Luongo was there.
He was drafted
by
that
team.
Who's
now the fourth best player. Again, you want to talk about other guys. Jason Spezza was drafted by that team and traded for Alexi Yashin. I don't know if people realize that there have been some exceptionally good players that have filtered through the Islanders franchise only to be discarded. And now that you had what most Islanders fans are calling a generational talent come through and didn't change the overall arc of your franchise until he left, he's not that important.
Also, Tavares isn't even the best player on the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, I agree. But that's besides the point. Like, if the Islanders really wanted to, and here's where it could get scary, because Lou's a pretty smart guy, I understand. I mean, he seems like he knows a thing or two about winning Stanley Cups.
He's done that.
What would stop Lou Lamoriello from offering Braden Point a contract this summer?
I thought you were going to say Mitch Marner. I'd be
no.
like, yes, chaos.
No. What would? But again, if you really want to go after Mitch Marner, you probably could too. But again, what would stop him from offering Braden Point, Tampa Bay's tight against the cap?
Yeah.
What would stop him from offering Braden Point a contract? Nothing.
Do they have the picks?
I'm pretty certain I can look that up, but I'm pretty certain they do.
They could just pull a Boston and try and get their picks back so they can offer sheet. Because that's what Boston tried to do a couple of years ago. I think they tried to offer sheet. Who was it? They were trying to offer sheet somebody, I think, from Toronto.
Islanders have all three first-round draft picks next year. The next 3 years of first-round draft picks.
So they can
I'm
do
assuming
it.
That they could probably do it, yeah.
Then you also need the seconds from the next...
They have a Calgary second, and they have two second. I know they have to have their own. They could always look to trade it back, I guess. But it was traded away on. Who did they trade it to? Oh, they traded it in getting rid of the Grabowski deal to Vegas. So they'd have to go back and talk. And then the Vegas traded it to get Thomas Tatar from Detroit. So Detroit owns that right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to look at getting one back, I guess, in terms of getting that back. But at the same time, though...
Or you could come to an agreement. I guess you couldn't come to a cheaper agreement because then Tampa would just match it.
But at the same time, though, if you could convince Detroit to swap that Calgary second-round pick back for your Islanders second-round pick and then go out and start offer sheeting people like crazy,
Potentially the Calgary pick could be higher than the Islanders pick.
Although
how things shake out.
You can't offer sheet, though, until July 1st. In the draft for 2019, which is where that used pick is already gone, they would still have the 2020, 2021, and then further on picks to use. So they would still be able to offer sheet. It wouldn't matter.
I want this to happen so bad. I want somebody to use an offer sheet and have it work.
Yeah.
So their projected cap space is like $10 million next year.
Hello, Braden Point.
Yeah.
Want to come to Long Island? We're building a new rink.
Like, not $10 million. I'm just talking $10 million just in the forward. Like, they have no money tied up next year. Their total amount of forwards right now in 2019-2020, again, you're probably going to go and re-sign Jordan Eberle. You'll probably re-sign Brock Nelson. You'll probably re-sign Anders Lee, although that's apparently up in the air right now. Phil Pula, you can probably let go, but he was a pretty good pickup in terms of getting him going. And then Matthew Barzal doesn't become a restricted free agent until 2021. The only other UFA you have is Tom Kuhnhackl. Okay, bye-bye. Have a nice day. You have $24 million in salary right now that are committed for next year already, and you have four major free agents. Pretty sure you can fit Braden Point and Mitch Marner in there. Your two defenders that are unrestricted next year, Lucas Spezza and Dennis Seidenberg. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Seidenberg's.
Why do they have Lucas Spezza signed to a contract?
He's not. They picked him up when they traded for him or whatever. He's still on a $1.5 million. So he's unrestricted on July 1st, though. But you have Johnny Boychuk, Nick Leddy, Thomas Hickey, Ryan Pulock all signed up through 2021. This team is set.
Offer sheet. Offer sheet.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Robin Lehner.
Like there's going to be offer sheets this year.
Yeah.
Anyways. That
you can't.
Like that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So.
It's going to be great. This offseason is going to be nuts.
I'm going to say it right now. If the Islanders can go out and make a deal like this, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Their projected cap space for 2019-2020 is $31 million total. You have $31 million
like
to spend.
Half the cap over.
You can literally go out and get a dozen good players for that.
Yeah.
But if you really want two really good ones, Marner and Point, I mean, again, you're going to have to figure out which one you want because you only have a certain amount of draft picks. But if you can go get Braden Point and or Mitch Marner, why wouldn't you?
Imagine Matt Barzal with Mitch Marner.
Imagine
that would be terrifying.
Imagine Matt Barzal with Braden Point.
That would also be terrifying.
I mean, Braden Point and Mitch Marner are pretty much the identical player.
Yeah.
The same stature. They're the same.
Anders Lee, Matt Barzal, Braden Point, right there is your first line. That first line scores 100 points easy.
Yeah.
Easy for one of those three players.
They'd be the next Kucherov Point.
Could very well be, yeah.
Yeah.
And you still got Anthony Beauvillier in there who certainly can play. Still got Casey Cizikas who's in there who can play. Still got Uncle Leo who's in there who, whatever, he's there. But Cal Clutterbuck signed right through to like 2022, 2023.
Don't forget about Andrew Ladd.
Good old Andy Ladd.
Him and his 5.5 mil a season. Yeah, not bad.
He only plays
bad.
Half a season every year.
But I look at this and I go, you guys are literally whining about a player you were A, never going to get back, and B, probably never want to see again. Stop whining about it and just look to next year, because next year might be the return of the Stanley Cup to Long Island.
Yeah.
The future is bright in Long Island after the John Tavares departure.
It's gotten better.
Better.
You lose your franchise player and the team gets better.
How many teams could say that? That they lost their franchise player to free agency or whatever it is after retirement and they got better.
And Toronto stayed the same.
Yeah. There's not too many teams that can say that.
Also, I hate the pajama boy thing, because the Leafs thing wasn't pajamas. It was a bedsheet.
Yeah.
Well, that's details that people don't want to pick up on, right? So, saying that, though, I do agree with you, though. That's ridiculous in terms of
he probably was wearing PJs under that.
Well, sure, but I mean, what kid doesn't?
Wearing Ottawa Senators PJs.
Yeah. New York Islanders ones.
want to throw out a congratulations to the Sturgeon Heights Huskies. They won the Winnipeg High School Hockey Championship yesterday in dramatic fashion. The late penalty, and they scored a power play goal. So that's it's a big honor for them.
Who'd they beat?
They beat Garden City in the final. So 3-game epic series, apparently, with Sturgeon Heights winning game one, Garden City winning game two, and then Sturgeon Heights winning game three there in that dramatic finish. So congratulations to them as they get to celebrate a little bit and certainly finish their, some of those seniors, and they may get to finish with a championship this season. Do want to set up, though, with that notion, the epic Canada West final that's going to happen this weekend. I'm not talking about the men's final because nobody cares about the Golden Bears and Huskies.
Oh, really? The Golden Bears and Huskies are in the Canada West final. Wow.
That's only like, that's what, the, for like the 14th or 15th straight season now?
Yeah.
Is that correct? Alberta and Manitoba in Edmonton goes Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Rumor has it, a little birdie has told me that CSJR from Edmonton will be carrying the game if you want to listen to it for free. So that's an opportunity if you don't have Canada West TV, don't want to pay their outrageous pricing for the series, which I'm supposed to promote, but I'm not going to promote because I do think it's outrageous. But if you don't want to pay for it, CSJR, look up their website. They're reportedly going to have the games on all 2 days for sure, and then if necessary, game three on Sunday. In saying that, there are some casualties that have gone through the semifinal round. Manitoba will be without Alexandra Sparky Anderson. We had her on the show last week. She was fantastic. Suffered a shoulder injury. She is out for this weekend. There is no report on the severity. Let's just hope she's not out for nationals, because these two teams have also qualified for nationals. Speaking of nationals, a player who may be out for nationals, conference second leading scorer and second leading goal scorer, Alberta Panda, Autumn McDougall, reportedly has a separated shoulder. That's a 4-week injury, folks.
And that's minimum 4 weeks usually.
That's the problem. And usually the shoulder comes back a little weaker after that. Mm-hmm. So
even if she makes an appearance, it might just pop right out again.
And that's the fear, right? Do you want to risk long-term damage? Because if it pops out again, you're not getting any better after that.
No. Then you're out longer.
Yeah. So we might be talking about the second best scorer in Canada West having her season done.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not here to celebrate an injury. I want to make this very clear, folks, but that's an advantage for Manitoba.
I was going to say advantage Manitoba, yeah.
So, again, losing Sparky is a big hole on the defensive side, but I like the fact that Chloe Snaith has played a number of games this year, has looked very comfortable. She can step in. I'm not certain that you can get somebody to step in for Anderson. Or for McDougal.
Yeah. You can cover for Sparky. You can obviously you can't replace her because she's
nobody's asking to replace her, but yeah.
But you can patch that hole with what you have. McDougal's just so hard to replace.
She's the straw that stirs that drink on that line. And don't get me wrong, I get that Ganser and Poznikov are great in their own right, and they certainly will make whoever's playing with them better. But you're also removing somebody who's going to have to move up in the lineup now from another line that could be effective.
And you're missing that finish, right?
Well, absolutely.
Like who's going to be scoring the goals now?
She was the second leading goal scorer. She was one goal behind Poznikov all season long. They put up like 99 points or something this season, those three. And you go, holy crap, like that's a ton of points. And you're taking a third of that away, basically.
Yeah.
That's not good.
And then you've got because they've been playing together all year, so you're throwing
another... Well, for 2 years now.
Yeah. Because
they played last year as well, yeah.
So you're throwing another player in there against, you know, one of the top two teams in the conference, one of the top teams in the nation, when you haven't played a game together. You're trying to find a spark, find some form of chemistry in probably the worst situation you could. I just hope that they've been like on the ice every single day since they found out that she would miss that series, trying to build up some form of chemistry between those three.
You're going to have to. And don't get me wrong, Howie's going to pull out every... I mean, Howie Draper won. He's coach of the year this year. Canada was coach of the year. Poznikov was player of the year. It's not like they're coming in. They had rookie of the year, and I think in Holly Oswald as well. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, sorry. Brianne Trotter was... Sorry, that was my fault. Brianne Trotter was...
Year.
She had a fantastic year, too. But I look at that, and I go, you can't replace that kind of offense. Like, you just can't from your top line. She's so fast. She's so good with the puck. She finds the holes all the time. She's so good at finding those little seams to get into a good scoring position, and then takes the feed from Poznikov and scores all the time.
Future member of the Calgary Inferno.
If you can find her, because I'm not certain that... I haven't seen very many 4'11 players out there, but
yeah.
Erica Lawler might be the last player that did that. So in saying that, though... Want to wish Bisons the best, obviously, this weekend. Take nothing for granted. Take the fact that they're missing one of their top players doesn't make them any less lethal. They're still the Pandas. They're still gonna play like bats out of hell when it comes to Claire Drake Arena. So, knock on wood that the Bisons can get ready. But that's a pretty good setup if you're Manitoba right now, that you don't have to face the lethal duo of those two. No complaints there, I guess.
Yeah.
Joining the other teams in Charlottetown, we just mentioned two of them. Alberta and Manitoba are going from the West. We know UPEI is going there. They're hosting this year, so it shouldn't be hard to find them on the map. McGill and Montreal from the RSEC are the two teams playing in the final there, so they will go. Montreal ranked number two all season, well, one or two all season long. They've been outstanding as well. McGill's been in the top 10 the entire season as well, so again, we're going to get a showdown there between two of the top teams, just like we got in Manitoba. In Ontario, it's Guelph and Ryerson, and Western and Toronto. So Western, who was there last year, may get a chance to go back. Have to get by Toronto if that's the case. And out in the AUS, it's a battle between St. FX and St. Thomas right now, as they are trying to determine who gets that last spot, because UPEI has got the first spot being the host there. So whoever wins that championship will go to the Canada West, or go to the U Sports National Championship out in Charlottetown as well. I don't want to say this out loud too loudly, but joining them, another good team that's going to be going down there. Myself and Jason Pajak are going to be heading down there. We're going to have some fun. We're going to
PEI.
We're going to broadcast the hockey show on the Thursday night from, depending on game time. And people need to realize this. And I totally forgot about this when I was talking about the other day. Everything's 2 hours later down there.
Mm-hmm. So PEI time.
Yeah, so it's 2 hours earlier out here. So if you're thinking, like, we're going to be 5 o'clock on the air, everything's great, no big deal, like we were last year in London when there was, like, a game that was just beginning to get out. No, we're going to be in the middle of a game if we're on the air.
Yeah.
The game started at 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock that night, and we'd be on the air at 7:30 Charlottetown. So it might be a gong show in there, because that could be... I think last year the Thursday night game was the host night when Western played.
It wasn't Western and Sask.
No, that was the semifinal. It was Western and I can't remember who the
Montreal
other team was. No, Montreal.
Can
Concordia.
Saint Effects. No, Concordia was on our side. I can't remember who the last team was that was there. Who am I missing?
Because we played Queens.
Might have been Montreal then, because Montreal was on, like, on Constellation side, so maybe Western beat Montreal then. So if that's the case, then we were there during that, and it got pretty loud in the second half when we were playing the John Rempel interview last year. So I was glad that we had that recorded, because I don't think we would have got much talking done. We would have been like, "What? What's going on?" So we might be in a little bit of traffic area, a little bit of a high, depending on where they put us anyway, a high cheering section crowd anyway for where we'll be standing. But in saying that. We're going to get down there. We're still working on Kylie. Still going to see if she can go as well. She's working on trying to get time off work in terms of getting that going. But we're hopeful, knock on wood, that the three of us will be able to get down there. Have Kylie on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Get her on the show for once. So that'll be fun to get that going. But we'll be down there. We're going to broadcast every game back to Manitoba as well. So if you don't want to pay for the U Sports package, which is even more expensive than the Canada West package, listen, keep your station tuned right here, 101.5 UMFM. We will get the game schedule up on UMFM.com so you can find out when they're playing and when to listen and certainly have some fun that way. So congratulations to the women for qualifying, number one, and beating UBC. That was an outstanding series. Jason, you were there for the entire series. How did you think it went?
It was just...
It was a war out there.
It
I'm going to say.
Like, it was
physicality
just,
was high. The goal scoring was exceptional.
Yeah.
Goaltending was sharp.
Yeah, aside from Mikolaj's trouble with her glove hand.
Sure,
but
yeah.
Everything else, like the amount of times that she, and this goes back to the regular season series, that last two game set when they were here, she made some outstanding plays.
We saw her glove one out of the air that was going across the line. It looked like it was going across the line. It did not get across the line. Yeah. She pulled that one back. We saw her make a couple of big saves against Sharman in terms of her breakaway and stopping that in game one there. So we saw a penalty shot. We saw a disallowed goal. Yeah. Well, the disallowed goal was the one she saved. But we saw everything this weekend. It was fantastic hockey.
And I feel just absolutely amazing for Carissa Kirkup. Because
that kid's got something.
Yeah, I talked to her after the game, and she was very emotional. I just flat out asked her how it felt after what happened last year with the injury and having to miss getting that second chance, and she wants this so badly.
We talked a little bit about on the air on the broadcast that Carissa kind of has that Venla Hovi feeling this year that. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that's going to stop her. She'll go through a wall to get this championship this year. Yeah. So I think that's a good thing to have for the Bisons, because if you think there's no fire in their bellies right now, that's...
It's there.
That's where it's burning. It's the heart of Carissa is there.
The confidence, just talking to Erica after game one even, saying, like, we're an unreal team. We know we're an unreal team. We're going to work. We're going to do whatever it takes to win every single night. It's like, yeah. Like, you get that feeling. It's the same feeling I got last year, is that... You get the feeling around the team and the players, and you see them together, you hear them in the room, you see them on the bench. Like, you get the sense, like, this is a championship-winning team. This is a team that will go to war for each other and come back with a banner.
Chance to do that this weekend, Friday, Saturday. And I know last week we were joking around a couple weeks ago with Alana Sharman, who was saying that, you know, we only want to play two games. We're not coming back on Sunday. I kind of feel like that might be the idea for this week as well, where we're not coming back on Sunday to play the third game in Edmonton that night. So we'll see what happens. I do want to say before we go, and this is a special message. If I know she probably isn't listening right now, there's a lot of stuff going on. But Alana Sirhan, if you are listening, I do want to make this very clear. If you haven't heard, her mom did pass on. Our hearts, our thoughts, our prayers, our condolences are with you in this time. It's a very difficult time, obviously, in terms of getting everything going, but you're always one of our favorites, Alana, and we certainly want to make sure you're doing okay. If you need anything, reach out to the Hockey Show. We'll be happy to get messages out for anything that you guys may be doing. But again, tough time right now for everybody around the Sirhan family Roxanne Sirhan was hugely supportive of her daughter's hockey career and certainly her university career. And it's a pretty sad day for her to learn that Roxanne is no longer with us. So all the best to the Sirhan family. We are thinking about you guys in this time, and hopefully things get a little bit better as time goes on here. With that, got about a minute left here. Anything you guys want to say before we get out of here?
Stop being racist, please.
That,
can we all come to an agreement?
That's a good thing.
We should get the... You know those stop signs they used to have on kids' backs in hockey? Yeah. Now they should have those stop signs, but underneath say being racist.
Put that on. Give that to everybody as they walk in the door. Yeah. You're stop being a racist. You're stop being a racist.
Here, put this on your forehead, and maybe people will look at it.
Yeah. Give out rolls of duct tape at the start of the game. Just slap it over someone's mouth.
Exactly. I think that would be a better idea.
Let's just throw these guys in jail, and maybe
there we go.
Yeah, let's just do that.
That's not a bad idea, and I think Beans, you may have hit something on the head. I hope that security people will take this far more seriously in terms of what's going on. Just a quick update in the Toronto Islanders Cry Fest. It is a 0-0 game with 7 minutes remaining in the first. So
somebody's going to cry about that.
You can tune in and see if you can catch it anywhere else, but if you want to see tears, tune in to see the crying at the mausoleum over John Tavares, everybody.
The Nassau Mausoleum is what it's called?
Yeah. That's what I've been calling it for a long time, where careers go to die, right? So,
yeah.
With that, folks, it's another Thursday that we're done here. Happy to have you along every Thursday. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Next week, we will be back with some more craziness here on the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.